So aside from that, obviously the major theme of the show is 5G. Are you sick of 5G yet? She's thinking, how do I answer this?
I am a CMO.
She's thinking, Scott, what are you doing?
No, no, it's okay, it's okay. Like, I've actually, you know, it is so talked about.
Hello and welcome to a special telecoms.com podcast live, although it's not live because obviously it's pre-recorded, but it's live, all right? Live from Mobile World Congress in a beer garden where we're having a beer. All right, guys, cheers. Jamie, cheers.
Oh, nothing like artificial fun, is there?
You're having a little vape as well. So we've got, obviously, Ian and Jamie here. We might have some special guests, so stay tuned. And we're just going to talk about what we've been checking out of the show. Have I got to do the, you can listen to it somewhere and you can watch it somewhere else. There we go. Yeah. Good. All right, so I'll start with my thing. Mm-hmm. I wrote a piece yesterday.
What's your thing?
Well, yesterday.
Yes, well, or whenever. I wrote a piece yesterday when we're recording.
It's been a work in progress.
We're just going to mess with the fourth wall the whole time. I wrote a piece at some time prior to recording this. And the headline, you know, I'm struggling to remember the headline. I was out pretty late last night.
The headline was, I can give it to you, I think it was something like 5G reaches its anticlimax.
Reaches its anticlimax, there we go.
Aren't you glad you have me around?
Yes, thank God. I know, and do you know what, I can't return the favour, I can't name any of the headlines you've written, sorry. Yeah. Okay.
Well, you checked it with me, you cleared it with me and Ray, remember?
Oh, that's right, Well, I'm always worried I'm going to overstep that mark. And the theme of it, other than just trying a bit of sort of vague double entendre, was that we've finally got 5G this year. 5G's actually arrived, we've got these phones, we've got fixed wireless access, we've got bits and bobs happening. But to me, it feels like a little bit of an anticlimax in so much as everyone's like, oh, is that it? Mm. And, you know, so there's the fixed wireless access thing. Nokia was talking about that. Fixed wireless access, for people who don't know, is just a way of providing broadband but over wireless rather than through fibre or whatever. And you can see it's quite a potentially good use case, because if you're someone who hasn't got fibre or hasn't got any decent fixed line, you can get that. But even Nokia's own estimate...
I'm not convinced by it at all. I think it is a use case, but ultimately it's a cop-out for people that don't want to spend money on fibre. Fibre is always going to be better, irrelevant of how fast... Around how fast 5G is, and to your home, fibre is always going to be better. I think it's just a cop out for BT.
I suppose there are going to be communities that they're never going to get fibre to because it's just not economical to do.
So they're in the middle of nowhere
areas, and they're already
like parts of Wales, for example.
But I don't see it as something very revolutionary because they already use 4G, don't they, to do that in some areas. I don't think it's something that anyone's going to get hugely excited about.
No, well, that's what I was leading up to. Even Nokia's own estimates are something like 27 million households globally by 2024. That's not that much, is it? Yeah. So the total available market isn't that huge.
It's like, you know, that the three triangles, which I think you had in your story as well, and you have EMBB, and then we've got the IoT one, and the kind of latency one. The EMBB, it's sort of a subset of that, isn't it? Really, it's not really one of those or the other. It's mobile broadband. You always think of as being people sort of running around with smartphones and gadgets like that.
I mean,
fixed line fill-in, isn't it?
I think so, and I think they're going to use it as an excuse, and a lot of people are going to create huge problems like they did with Vectoring in Germany and G.Fast in the UK. They're going to think it's a suitable replacement or a temporary solution, and then all of a sudden, in a couple of years' time, they're going to be in exactly the same position as BT is in with G.Fast now, and everyone's slating them for not investing in fibre.
Well, I've got one more take on fixed wireless access at this stage. It is, I think, the vendors are queuing it up as an early sort of demonstration of ROI on 5G infrastructure spend. So if you're an operator, if you're Verizon, they've been quite big on it, haven't they? Mm. You can actually say, look, yeah, we've got all the CapEx getting blown on 5G, but look, we're already getting this new little revenue stream. But it feels, I think we all agree, it feels sort of too small to be of sort of profound significance.
Yeah, I suppose it could be additional sales if you're going into areas that have never had broadband.
Yeah.
I think it could be big, but only because people are using it as an excuse not to invest in fiber. I think if you certain telcos will take the opportunity and say, look, we're going to do this. We can't give you fiber because it's too difficult and there's no justification, i.e. they don't want to spend the money. And they'll use this as an alternative. And some people will be happy, but then down the line, they'll be pissed.
The issue I have with it as well is that there are various technologies competing in that area. So, you know, in Africa, they talk about using satellite services to do some of that. You also have groups like TIP, you know, the Telecom Infra Project with
Terragraph.
And there's something that Deutsche Telekom has been showing off called Virtual Fiber, which seems to be another TIP project that's kind of closely related and using, you know, very high sort of millimeter wave spectrum. So it's kind of hard to see which one of these different options is really going to really going to take off, and it's something that's question marks over all of them.
And as you point out,
I agree with Jamie. I think it's just going to be small, really kind of small areas. I don't think anybody's going to sensibly go and do a massive rollout of this stuff. And if they do, then I agree. I think there's a question mark over how long it can be around, because at the end of the day, you're going to have to get to move to fibre. And in the countries where they haven't made that decision to do fibre to the premise, which is, you know, that's happened in France, where they've been quite aggressive on it. Germany's been a market where they've got a much sort of slower evolution towards
Spain's
it.
Spain's been very aggressive.
It will eventually happen there as well, I think, in most communities.
I mean, it has to.
Spain's been aggressive, yeah.
It has to happen, and ultimately, if you want 5G, you've got to fibre up the market anyway. You know, you've got to fibre up your base stations. So
indeed.
You know, I mean, this is what Nokia's message is, isn't it? It's a fibre backbone with wireless wings. Mm. And, you know, I don't believe in that sort of like final delivery to over the airwaves to the consumer. I just think it's just asking for trouble, and it's very short-sighted. Yeah.
And I think it's come up, just to sort of conclude that one, I think it's come up because we're really early days. That was why I went for the anti-climax thing. We're really early days in 5G, and the actual real-life commercial manifestations of it are pretty limited, and that's just one of the few that have come along. But one other thing before I sort of ask you guys what your main themes have been, the other thing that interested me, and this is a more positive 5G angle, so you talked about that sort of triangle, the three main sort of pillars.
Yeah,
I love that. Jamie topping up his vape while we're doing the pod.
Better than filling with his phone.
Yeah. He's always got to have some gadget on the go. So we got enhanced mobile broadband, we got IoT, which I think's not necessarily a 5G thing, it kind of takes care of itself.
Yeah,
doesn't it?
That's the curious thing about IoT, is that we already have NB-IoT and LTE
and
various
all
other
stuff.
Things. I think with IoT, I think with 5G, what it really does is give you the kind of core systems to support billions of connections potentially.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I spoke to, again, you don't need it as long as you've got, you know, if you've got LTEA, you're fine. You know, you can get, it's fixing a problem that isn't there. I think a lot of the cases. I think they're searching for justification, and the operators have literally just got to be mature and own up to the fact that there is no silver bullet at the moment.
Right.
And I think this is part of the reason why I'm quite relieved that it's a bit underwhelming at Mobile World Congress this year.
It's a bit just more honest, isn't it?
Yeah, because ultimately it's not, you know, there's no massive euphoria, and perhaps there's a realization that this is going to take a long time to pay off.
Yes.
It is a very long-termist strategy.
No, you're completely right. I agree 100%. I would say, just to finish off my bit, the most interesting part of those three core sort of use cases, 5G for me, is the low latency one.
Yeah.
Which you might think initially, low latency or big deal, you know, latency is not a big problem for me. But then when you look at some of the things it enables, and I put this in my story, things like sort of simultaneous synchronized broadcast over long distances. Obviously, there's all the sort of robotic this and remote controlled that and all that sort of thing. That's the one that's ultimately, when we look back on it like 10 years, that's going to be the one that defines 5G. And the reason it's underwhelming now is we haven't got any of that going on in the wild right now, have we?
Mm. Well, I mean... Do you want me to take over at this point?
Yeah, go for
that. That neatly segues into one of my takeaways, because one of my takeaways would be seeing some of that being demonstrated at this and hearing people talk about it a bit more. So we're still quite a long way away from that, partly because the standard's not ready. So we need the 5G that everyone's talking about at the moment is release 15, which gives you the enhanced mobile broadband.
Yeah. Which is a bit more 4G,
really. What they need for the ultra low latency is release 16, and that's not going to be that's not going to be available commercially for a couple of years probably. So,
I mean, they've already delayed it.
They've already delayed it.
It was December 2019.
There's a delay.
They pushed it back three months.
There's a three-month technical delay, but I think the issue there is coming up with the business cases, you know, and you see some moves towards that happening at Mobile World Congress. So Deutsche Telekom had a big demo on its press day where they had Claudia Nehmer, who's the head of technology there, showing off this deal they've done with a manufacturer in Germany called Osram. It's apparently one of the biggest lighting manufacturers.
Yeah, they used to be light bulbs, didn't they? Yeah. Back when we did that sort of thing.
So they've already got a kind of 4G deal at their factory in place with Deutsche Telekom, and they're now showing off things like moving robots across the factory floor over sort of 5G connections.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily always everybody. It's not actually always a low latency why they want to use it in industrial settings. It's also to do with this technique called network slicing, where you could get much better sort of service level agreements on things like Wi-Fi.
So that's the other thing.
And also getting cabling out of the way, apparently. I never thought about this much before.
But that makes
sense. They want no cabling on the factory floor. And if you try and use fixed line systems, then that's kind of an issue. So the lack of cabling, network slicing, which kind of carves out a bit of the network and gives you security and, you know, it's kind of service availability guarantees that you wouldn't get otherwise. And then the latency. And the other thing Deutsche Telekom was showing was actually how latency can be used in the consumer market. So they have this tie-up with Samsung and Niantic, which I think is a gaming company.
Oh yeah, didn't they do Pokemon Go or something?
And Pokemon Go. Maybe not behind Fortnite, but certainly Pokemon Go, yeah.
No, they've not done Fortnite.
They're not Fortnite.
You're just wrong on that one.
So they've got this game where it's like a virtual reality dodgeball thing that they were showing off.
Cool.
You have to have, the reason latency is important is because it brings things like virtual reality into it.
Yes.
Otherwise you end up getting dizziness or it just doesn't work properly.
You end up just throwing up all over the place.
So they need 5G for that, and they need investments in edge computing as well. That's the other thing that kind of goes hand in hand with 5G is getting those edge computing investments out. So they have these kind of four cities now where they're trialing this stuff in Germany, and potentially it could go out a lot further. But that's the big question, is whether, you know, whether they can find the business case to justify making the investment on a broader scale.
Well, that's the big sort of chicken and egg thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
But then sometimes you're not going to find out until you make the investment and put it in the wild. I mean, lots of people have said that. So I've been sitting there sort of slagging off 5G against a bit of an anticlimax, but lots of people have pointed out that 4G, like 3G, for example, didn't really get going until the iPhone came out. 4G didn't get going until about sort of 5+ years after it was launched, in terms of people coming up with really useful new applications for it. So, and that's going to be the case with 5G, but people have got to invest in the infrastructure before they can find that stuff out.
It's the chicken and egg thing, isn't it? And that's why it's quite so difficult, I suppose. But that it potentially interesting, because that's the thing that could really make the difference. It could open up, you know, revenue streams for the operators. It could be, you know, you hear companies like John Deere, they make farming equipment, I think. But they
tractors.
Talk about tractors, yeah, they talk about kind of productivity improvements from using sensors and IoT stuff. So if it could have if low latency could have a kind of similar impact on business productivity, then we can see why Germany wants to get ahead in this area, because it's obviously worried about losing out to the Chinese in the future. It was sort of really fast, apparently, on all of this stuff. So
I think that's going to be a theme of future years of Mobile Congress, is exactly what you're just talking about, whether people are actually doing useful real life stuff with it. I'm going to hand over to Jamie, because I think we're in danger of him just completely losing him. Jamie, what's been catching you out at the show?
I mean, for me, it's been, well, the underwhelming nature of 5G. I don't think it's anywhere near as hyped this year as it was last year. Which I quite like, because it's a mature approach to a technology which is going to take decades to pay off.
It's the trough of whatever they call it.
The disillusionment, that Gartner hype cycle thing.
But then the other, but the edge has been the big message for me coming throughout the entire show. I mean, I think people are starting to realise that, you know, to do 5G properly, you do need edge to take off.
Yeah.
You know, you need to distribute computing power all around the network. You need to be able to remove processing power from devices. I mean, this is the one thing I think that's massively holding back the IoT space, is that because you don't have a particularly intelligent edge, you have to embed intelligence onto devices, and embedding intelligence onto devices is expensive. You know, you take a what could be a $10 product and you make it a $35 product. You know, if you're scaling that to 10,000, that makes a huge impact on your financials. But if you can embed intelligence and processing power into the clouds, all of a sudden you can create dumb products which can scale easily and then fuel the IoT euphoria. There's a great in Hall, I think it's Hall 3, they did have an example of a dumb robot, and it was just literally a robot, but all of the intelligence was embedded in, admittedly, it was just like a minor data center about 3 foot away,
yeah.
But it illustrated the point, you know, this dumb robot could be intelligent because it's leaning on the power of the clouds and the power of wireless. So I think that for me, the edge is, yeah, it's really important.
Yeah. And that feeds into the low latency thing as well, because there's certain physical facts like the speed of light.
Well, the latency is interesting because if you talk to the tech guys, they say the standard itself, the Release 16, actually only gets latency down a bit. It's the edge investments that are the big,
right,
the,
I see.
The big difference.
Okay, yeah. So it's as much the actual geographical positioning.
It's the geographical position is the real issue.
Right.
Yeah.
This is the one thing someone pointed out to me the other day, actually, is we're not going to face these massive problems in the UK that other countries are going to face.
Like, yeah, big countries.
We're small countries, yeah. So we've got a very dense network, and we've got actually sort of like a very, for our population size, we have a lot of data centres per square kilometre, if that makes sense. I can't think of a better way to describe it, but you know, they're not as spread out as they would be in North America, for instance. So in places like North America, the edge is going to become critically important, because you know, you're not sending data 3 kilometres to a data centre. Yeah. You're sending it, you know, 300 kilometres, well, and then that starts to make a real big difference.
One of the issues is what the edge is exactly, because you know, some companies talk about the edge and they mean building a few extra data centres so that you can move computing power a bit closer to users. But then you have this concept of fog computing, where the edge is even closer to the device, and maybe even the device itself in some cases.
So fog is like even more distributed than cloud, is what we're saying.
Exactly. What, he's telling me to either vomit everywhere or louder. Speak louder.
He's saying speak up.
Right. So if you talk to Deutsche Telekom and Telefonica and companies like that, they're saying now that they're thinking of looking at ways to use, as Jamie's saying, use the central offices they have.
Yeah.
There's a big industry initiative called CORD, which is central office re-architected as a data center. You kind of turn it into a kind of mini data center that's closer to customers.
That's actually just in your
office. and then you roll out the software you need at that location, and it's probably not going to happen across all of the data center, all of the central offices that operators have in some of these markets. But there's a lot of them where they look to sort of take advantage of edge computing, and then they get these latency benefits that you need for some of these applications.
Well, I mean, eventually you can have hyper, you can have real proper edge. You know, as soon as you can get it to sort of like scalable and get the costs down, and you know, the applications with super low latency start appearing, you know, you get the cabinets at the end of the streets. They might, you could house a little data center in there, and that might help out for autonomous vehicles, which require that instantaneous communication. But again, this is a case of 4, 5, 6, 7, 10, 20 years down the line.
Right.
It's going to take decades for stuff like autonomous vehicles to actually even hit our. I don't think in my lifetime we'll see autonomous vehicles.
I think the risk for operators.
Well, you're not getting any younger, Jamie.
You two will be 10 years max
in the bank.
You two will be dead and buried before autonomous vehicles come around.
Right. On that note, so we've had. I'm going to see if I can catch their eye. I thought, as we're at Mobile World Congress. And basically the rest of the world is all here, why don't we get some of the rest of the world involved? So one of the people I want to bring on, waiting patiently on the sidelines, is Bengt Nordstrom from Nord Stream. Bengt, a general industry expert, is that how you describe yourself? That'll do.
I normally don't, actually, but now when you say it, why not?
Well, I think you are.
Okay, thank you very
certainly
much.
Certainly compared to me, but that's no great compliment. So Bengt, you know, we're here on the Wednesday. We've all been here for sort of 2 or 3 days. What's been the major themes for you?
I think, I mean, first of all, the whole Huawei security,
yeah,
US,
it's the elephant in the room, isn't it?
I think that is basically in all my operator discussions, and it was before this event, and it continues here. And I think there are sort of different lines of thought here that are interesting. One line of thought says that, okay, she and Trump will sort this out in a kind of big bundle deal. Rice, soy sauce, cars, telecom, and they will release the CFO from Canada and everything will be back to normal. And I think that's what many people are hoping for. And my
they've certainly got to stop locking people up if they want to sort of reach some kind of middle ground, haven't they?
Something like that. So, but my response has been that, okay, that's, let's hope for that, but our plans cannot be based on that. So it has more to be based on that it can go wrong. And I think the particular trigger here is if she is actually, the CFO is actually sent to the US and she will be in a court process, that is sort of very hard for China to accept. And,
yeah.
And you know, the measures and countermeasures that can be taken because of that. And so my recommendation to my clients when I've been meeting them here has been that, you know, hope for the best, but have a worst case scenario plan so you can, you know, survive even if you if they stop delivering equipment to you.
Yeah, well, obviously we joke about this Huawei pretty much every single week we chat about it, but it is big and it's definitely one of the things. Oh, were you about to say something, mate?
Well, no, I was pretty faint. I didn't mention that, but I think Huawei's been like the sort of undercurrent of the whole show, really. And apparently the US has even had sort of a delegation out here sort of leaning on people in the same way that Mike Pompeo was in Eastern Europe last week. And
I mean pressuring the industry to take a harder line on
them?
There
are US officials here trying to put pressure on Europe to lock out Huawei.
So there's not much sign, if we accept that anecdotally, there's not much sign of the Americans looking to reach this middle ground that you're hoping for.
I don't think they have any intention of meeting it, getting the middle ground. I think it's all a big charade that they're saying, look, we're trying to find a resolution that keeps everyone happy. And I think, you know, they're in the Oval Office. 3 weeks, she'll be locked up. I think ultimately they want to be combative with China.
It could very well be so. And in this case, I think that the approach when you say that, okay, we should scrutinize the code, and we should put in certification schemes that guarantees that there is no spyware, you know, that is not addressing the issue here. Because the bigger issue is you know, global power.
Yeah.
And so that's why, but that's, you know, the first, to your question, that has been the most overriding thing. Second is the fairly nice progression of 5G that we actually, when you go to all the hosts, you know, with Nokia, Huawei, Ericsson, there is actually 5G kit there. We're having the advanced antenna systems. They are ready to chip today. And there's a lot of activity here around, you know, what are the new use cases for 5G? How now? Yeah. Operators perhaps can make more money because when we have low latency, everything will change. And I it's probably very good that we have that sort of focus.
Yeah.
But
you know,
I'm not entirely convinced because my view is that, you know, we started with 80 milliseconds latency maybe 10, 15 years ago, and we're down to 15, 20. Can we explain how much money that has generated, or is it just sort of a natural progression of network which is embedded in all pricing we have? And I think it could be the same here. We lower latency, we get better, you know, performance and use cases for 5G, but it doesn't change the direction of the industry.
Is one of the issues with latencies, because we were talking a bit about this before you came on, Bengt, but the operators, the people I've been talking to, point out that 5G, the standard itself, only brings a small amount of benefit. Actually, you've got to build out the processing power much closer to the end customer, and that's quite a big investment to overhaul these central offices or whatever it might be that your edge infrastructure is going to be.
Yes, and it's a new business model where you need to have a lot of new skills for it to materialize. So that, but you know, I'm sort of a little bit of engineer, and I'm a bit fascinated that we can build that capacity and that we, you know, can boost the performance with 5G. So that's a good thing. Then perhaps the most interesting thing from our perspective when we've been meeting with people here is the financial market perspective on 5G and telecom industry. We have met, you know, pension funds and infrastructure funds and PE players and so forth, and they are all saying that it's a market that needs to be consolidated. You cannot go on sitting with four or three networks in every country. We like to invest in the infrastructure you have and run it as a utility business. So there is some sort of...
Is it? I mean, here's an interesting question. Do you actually... I mean, I don't disagree with you. There needs to be fewer operators, especially in Europe. But do you tackle that by taking down the number of operators in each individual market? Or do you make it easier for pan-European operators or multi-nation networks to exist?
Yeah. If you separate the two, the first thing, I'm now mainly saying what the investment community tells me.
I
find it a bit interesting because they are looking at our industry from a little bit of distance. They are not sort of, for them it doesn't matter if operators are successful with use cases. They just look at it from an overall perspective of how this industry looks like, and then they make that conclusion. So that's one side of it. I would tend to agree with them, because in our business, when we work with operator clients, it is very obvious that if you are a number four player in any given market in the world, you are subscale in your ability to invest with your number one and number two competitors in the market. So and nothing in 5G changes that, in my opinion. So I would say like this: if we get a new commissioner in Brussels later this year, and that is a more consolidation-friendly person, then we would have an avalanche of consolidation projects in Europe. It is on the strategic agenda for so many, but it's just the regulatory side that is preventing it. So the sort of economical forces in the industry are driving that direction. Then the question you ask are very relevant. You know, how does the dynamics of the market change then? Will we get like...
I think that's the best way to go about it, is to make it easier for cross-pollination between countries. Mm. You know, for instance, it doesn't have to be a pan-European network, but you could have, you know, the Nordics, for instance. All, you know, Telia has five or six operating companies across Europe. Why can't they have a single operating company and a single network and a single reporting function just to boost the efficiencies there?
We've been working with our operator clients to try to address that problem for the last 20 years.
Yeah.
I mean, as long as we've been running this business. And those synergies are so hard to obtain because, you know, when you run a network, the physical assets are in the actual market. And whether you have other physical assets in a different market doesn't make it more scalable, because the people that are maintaining and operating those are, you know, of different nationality. They cannot travel easily between countries. So the scaling effect of having more assets is not that big from what we have seen so far. And maybe that's sort of one of the things that, you know, companies like Vodafone learned over the last 15 years, that they, when they had that many assets, like more than 25 mobile operations, it didn't give them scale. So that's why they changed strategy and went for being fixed and mobile in a limited number of markets instead, and they think that that can deliver better results for them. So, I mean, I'm not disagreeing completely with that what you're saying could be tried, but I, from experience, I've seen many trying without succeeding.
Right. I'm going to butt in, because we could talk about this all day, but we've got another extra special guest waiting in the wings. Thanks a lot for joining
Thank
us,
you.
Mate. Really appreciate it.
Very
good
nice
to see
to
you,
be with
there,
you. Thank you very much.
And we're going to bring in, if Bengt's an industry expert, then this is just an industry legend that we're going to bring in now.
We're having beers, this is so exciting. Hello, gentlemen.
Hello. So, Mary Clark, obviously a veteran of the podcast. And
we have our shades on. We have our shades on.
Yeah, and for whom me and Ian have a hangover to thank today.
I do whatever I can.
So as we spoke about in the preview, the Tuesday night merry dinner is just a fixture of my world conference.
Yeah, I did get mentioned a little bit that podcast, didn't I? That Tuesday elusive Tuesday dinner. Do you know you never said my last name in that podcast? You just simply said Mary.
Yeah. Right.
Mary. Eventually you said Mary Synchronous, and I'm like, right. Oh, at least he said where I worked. You know?
So up until then, you were just some random Mary.
Some random Mary.
Right. Okay, that's well, right. Mary Clark Synchronous, happy now?
I'm happy. I'm very happy.
Which was the best thing, the peas or the cannelloni?
The cannelloni.
The cannelloni was spectacular.
Sublime. Jamie didn't make it. We got to invite you next year.
Yeah.
We need to show. It's good. It's really good.
Just have a dinner.
Ian didn't go before, and he's now. You know,
just have a dinner just for telecoms and light reading.
So let me explain that I do this media dinner. This is the thing I do every year, and I try to invite members from the media with the help of my wonderful PR firm, CC Group. Give them a little plug while I'm sitting here.
No, fair play.
And so we've been really successful, and so this was, I don't know, the fifth one I've hosted, maybe sixth.
Yeah.
And
I think it's the fourth one I've been on. Well, I first met you. The very first time I met you was at one of these dinners.
That is correct. So now it's really good.
Yeah, it's good fun.
And now they're all paying for it. It's all my fault.
And me and Rich, so you're talking about CC Group. I was out of Rich. I ended up knocking on the head at 5 in the morning.
And you had, didn't you have a briefing at 10?
Yeah, I had a briefing at 11, okay. And I woke up at 10:30.
How did that go?
I just thought, God, you're so grown up and professional, Scott. I was really proud of myself.
That you got up?
Well, do you know what? I made it in from waking up to being at the briefing in an hour. That's not a bad going, is it?
No. That's pretty good, actually.
So anyway,
you don't even look thrown together. You look all right.
Oh, you're too kind.
That's pretty good.
So enough about my immaturity and general debauched lifestyle. What's been going with you, Mary, at the show? What's been jumping out at you?
First of all, the fact that it's just Wednesday is killing me. It feels like it should be like Sunday.
Right. Have you still got a lot more show to go?
Yeah. You know what I've got to do.
Oh, of
I've
course.
Got
yeah, to do... we should talk about that. Yeah.
You know, my favorite topic. So I should talk about today. We were on, Glenn was on two panels. I was on one. We did...
Glenn being the CEO of Synchronous.
Sorry, yes. Glenn Lurie, CEO of Synchronous.
See, it's not just me that only uses first name.
I know. So Glenn was on a panel related to... How do you work with partners to create more revenue? Co-creation, which was a great little panel, great little fireside chat. And then he was in a panel that was on blockchain, which I couldn't go to because I was on another one at the same time about AI. And I was the only supplier vendor on stage with five operators. Vodafone, Telefonica, Elise from Finland, KDDI, and AT&T. And they were all just killing it with their stories on digital transformation. Everything was really good. And I was the only vendor there, which was really cool. But now I've got Women for Tech all day tomorrow.
Yeah.
Which is very exciting.
So tell us what that's all about.
So starting at 9:15 in the ministerial program area tomorrow until 1:15.
That's a punishing start on a Thursday, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. I'm not thinking about it. So I'll get there and I get to host the whole thing. I get to be the master of ceremonies, bringing people on, taking people off, and I'm really excited about it. It's
right.
But I also
I'm
the MC
running the show.
I'm not only Mary Clark, I'm also the master of ceremonies for the whole thing. Yeah, so it's totally fun. But we've got a phenomenal list of speakers, and but I'm also moderating now a panel, which I was supposed to be on, but now there's been an emergency, so the person couldn't come, so now I'm going to be actually doing the moderation for a panel on Me Too. So that's going to be interesting. So I've been prepping for that. So
yeah, I think
I'm excited.
You brought
that
up when we were chatting last night, and I was thinking, I'm pleased I'm not moderating that. I think I'd get myself in all sorts of hot water.
Yeah, I'm never letting you on stage talking about that. Chance in hell.
But what time's that? Actually, I quite like
that's
to see
noon.
That.
No, so right. Noon tomorrow. That'd be great.
I'll give it a go.
Yeah, that'd be good. It'll be really. I do have it. It's myself and I have a woman from the industry and I have a man from the industry. So it'll be, you know, I won't be one-sided in the conversation.
Right.
So I'm excited about it. So.
You're not just going to beat up the bloke.
No.
Good.
No.
Got to stand up for us, blokes.
None of this men bashing thing. You can't do that.
So aside from that, obviously the major theme of the show is 5G. Are you sick of 5G yet? She's thinking, how do I answer this?
I am a CMO.
She's thinking, Scott, what are you doing?
No, it's okay. I've actually, you know, I it is so talked about. But you guys have actually talked a lot about it. I mean, the edge computing stuff. I mean, I think that that's in the low latency. I mean, I every time I start to think about that, I can get my head around some of the use cases for that. And there's not, as soon as you think about the data that needs to be stored closer to wherever the data is needed and the ability to compute that and having the compute power closer to the edge, you know, I mean, I think that that works. And so, you know, I can get there, right? And I think the low latency gets there. So I'm hearing more and more potential use cases, like one we talked about today that I hadn't really thought about was you jump in, you got the low latency and you have the edge, right? Doing video calling more frequently and doing it group and having a better user interface sort of jumps, you know, way above what we're experiencing today. Like, okay, that's a good use case. That's a reasonable one to think about. You know, so I mean, it's putting these things in context that I think it makes the difference between
it. You just reminded me, actually, I was chatting to another CC group client. They're getting some good value out of me.
I would say.
Called Interdigital yesterday. Yeah, yeah. And I mentioned it in the story I wrote. And this guy, Alan Carlton, was talking about a future where basically all devices are just thin clients.
I don't care.
Because
I gotta keep it off the camera.
So you vaping in Mary's face.
It's quite all right.
I'd like to point out that I wrote that 2 years ago.
What, the thing I'm about to start going on about?
Yeah. About everything being a home screen.
Yeah, yeah, no.
Yeah, I wrote that 2 years ago.
Everything being a what?
Everything being a home screen.
Yeah.
Biometrics identifies you and pulls your home screen in from the cloud. And so, you know.
2 years ago, was it? Look at you ahead of the
curve. 2 years ago.
I just like the fact that he's saying it with sort of like, this is old news, shut the hell up.
yeah, thanks, Jamie. Why don't you just totally pull the rug out?
That's pretty much what I think was really the message there. It wasn't, you know, this that brilliant. It's just like, stop gobbing on about that.
Right.
Nobody cares.
Well,
I wrote about it 2 years
then
ago.
Then I won't bother talking about that anymore. go on then, Jamie. You come up with something.
There you go.
What did Alan Carlton?
No, Alan Carlton.
Alan Carlton.
So he's talking about the idea of moving processing power and memory and storage off these devices.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really important fact
that's what we were just
for the
about.
Industry.
Yeah. But it's quite relevant to Mary's day job as well, all this consumer cloudy stuff that you do.
But I think that's critical to evolve another aspect of the industry, which is these. And as soon as you take the need for a screen away from the smartphone, because everything can be a screen, or you take away the processing power or the storage capabilities, you make these dumb devices, like I was saying before, that creates so many opportunities to make
something different.
Really weird devices that we
because
we
you
can't
don't need
even
the processor,
now.
You don't necessarily need the storage. Totally changes the form factor. You're totally right, and I'm excited to see what the hell they do because it could be entirely different than what it is today.
Yeah,
yeah. And the main interface is voice as well, voice control,
and
or
that's
gesture.
True.
Or gesture.
And I don't think we talk about that enough. Yeah. I don't think we talk about our natural communication, right, is still talking to people, although it's almost gone. We're almost entirely looking at our phones, but. You know, that natural language processing, the natural language generation, right? NLP, yeah. I mean, that's what we want to do, but it's still, I think, a little further away.
And
I want to see what that turns into.
The big problem with it is that we haven't actually got the data to train the models to make sure that these, not enough people are using the voice recognition.
Right, or the Siri stuff.
Yeah, you're not actually getting the core data to train the algorithms. Yeah, yeah.
To make it work. So today on stage during that AI panel that I listened to, Irene from Telefonica talked about Aura.
Yeah.
AURA. Have you guys seen this?
Yeah.
They've got it deployed in 8 countries. They're doing 6 million.
Is that what they said?
Yeah. 6 million.
He's not going to believe it until his phone tells him it's true.
Yeah, I know. 6 million conversations a day.
Right.
And look, as far as I'm concerned, it's a great step, right? Because we've not had anything that's been pushed out. And they're using it for customer service. They're using it for their own stuff, which is great. I mean, that's certainly better brand engagement than we typically see from a mobile operator anyway. So, you know, that's a leap forward to begin with. But I was impressed to hear. And she's making it work in all sorts of places, right? She's making it work in Brazil. She showed a great video of Rafa Nadal using his set-top box that's got equipped with it, buying a jersey when he's got it in his home. He's got a little screen right there on his table.
Yep.
So the set-top box is now a screen and sitting right in the middle of his coffee table, and he talks to it. And so he ends up buying a jersey, watching while he's watching a football game.
Cool.
Yeah. I mean, I was at the press conference the other day, and I think what they're doing is they're effectively going head to head with Alexa and Google Assistant to create a gateway to the user for the digital ecosystem.
Yeah.
So the similar gated model which Facebook has done and monetized so well in social media, you could do that for the connected economy and the wider smart home and the wider
Well, Orange and Deutsche Telekom are trying to do it as well, aren't they, with their smart speaker? They have a similar thing.
But if that's what she said on stage, she was being very naughty and lying. Because those are the figures.
Blame it on my memory. I tweeted it, so it could be right in my tweet. How many does it say? Six?
6 million per month.
Oh, a month.
Six countries.
Then it's me. Okay, then it's totally me.
I mean, it would not surprise me if someone came up on stage and said, told a porcupine.
Yeah. Well, I could easily be my
memory. Don't take
it
personally, Mary. He's already undermined me on the pod. Now it's your turn.
Now it's my turn.
I don't know why Ian's getting off so late.
It's Ian's turn. Go on, Jamie.
Listen, Mary, I know that you got stuff to do.
I know. I
so you're a busy high-flying exec.
My feet are killing me. I go to another meeting and another dinner and...
Yeah.
It's my World Congress. It's what we do.
That's it, man. Well, but anyway, look.
Always good to see you.
Great to see you again. Thanks a lot for stopping by.
Absolutely. Continue to cause trouble. I will see you soon. Thank you, my friend. All right, you all. I'll
Cheers.
See
you. So, would you sort of wrap it up? Actually, that reminds me, talking about places to go, people to see. I think it's worth doing a little post-mortem with the social side. Would be nice. So Saturday night, Ian.
Mm-hmm.
How late were we out on Saturday night?
Three.
It's pretty late, wasn't it? We were hitting the old fashions, weren't we?
I think we were out till about three on Sunday.
Yeah, we were hitting the old fashions. Jamie, you had an eventful time getting here, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah.
Don't want to get into that?
Yeah, well,
you've told everybody else.
Saturday. missed my plane here. Damn. Arrived late Sunday. The hotel had given away my bloody room.
Yeah, how does that work? I mean.
Oh, I think we were talking about it, and it's a bit dodgy. I paid ahead of time for 5 nights.
Yeah. So
irrelevant
so
whether I'm there,
it, whether
or
you're there or not.
It's profiteering, like you said last night. It's profiteering a little bit.
Well, they should have phoned you at least.
Yeah, yeah. The worst thing was is that they said to me, oh, yeah, we got in contact with you. I was like, no, I mean, it's 9:30 at night. I wouldn't be stood in front of your bloody hotel if you got in contact with me. So, but no,
so they lied to your face as well, just to add insult to injury.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, I'm in a shithole now. So that's you know, good.
Excellent.
Good for the week.
Yes. Okay. And then Sunday we had the light reading /telecom/Ovum
That was a little bit earlier, wasn't it? It was 12:30 maybe that finished.
Yeah, because we had a couple after. And then Monday. So as I said in the preview, I've realised that the pro move is to try and just take it down a notch on Monday.
Yeah.
Because I know there's always Mary's thing on Tuesday, and Wednesday. So tonight. Once we've done doing all this, it normally culminates in Glaciar down in the in La Rambla, which normally wraps up about 2 in the morning.
It starts pretty late, doesn't it?
Starts about 10, yeah.
So
that's that. Did you guys went out Monday, did you?
Yeah,
with
we went
Orange.
Out to dinner with Orange. Yeah,
it's normally quite a nice meal.
Yeah, it was okay. It was,
only okay.
It was all right.
Orange going to be watching this podcast
game.
It's heavy on the fish,
wasn't
it?
That's just me. It probably was really good food. It's just...
Oh, God, Nick, it was quite heavy on the fish last night as well. You're not having a good run of luck, are you?
Yeah, I mean, I can handle it.
You can handle it. anything else? Any other little... Before we sort of wrap it up, any other last thoughts about the show?
I'm too spaced out, to be honest.
Yeah, you're ready to just call it a day.
Yeah.
Well, that's fair enough. Let's just call it a day, then.
Let's call it a beer.
You'd call it a beer, yeah. Look how I've been rationing my sad little plastic cup of beer.
So you could sign off with a swig of it.
Yeah, that's true, that's what I'll do.
Whilst we just hold empty glasses.
On that note.
Plastic.
We'll give a shout out. So we're shooting this in a beer garden that seems to be sponsored by Salesforce, and they said we could do it, so thanks Salesforce. Cheers for that. On that note, thanks a lot for watching. Here's my last beer, as you just choreographed. Next one we'll be back in London, make sure you join us for that.